Welcome to the Oldie Literary Lunch, sponsored by Noble Caledonia, the world experts in small ship cruising.
Our next author, Second Christopher, once wrote of a very British coup, not the story of the present Tory party, who can't even get themselves together, never mind the nation, but whether we see a grim future post-Brexit as we coast along, or will Brexit itself get lost in the post? Enough. My poem is becoming somewhat dull in retrospect. Welcome our author, Chris Mullin.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Seeing President Trump racing around town puts me in mind of a very brief encounter I once had with President George W. Bush. You know, when the American president comes, a great deal of razzmatazz surrounds his... Well, we're seeing that now, aren't we? He comes with a convoy of armoured land cruisers with windows blacked out. There are snipers on the roofs in Whitehall and security men with earpieces everywhere. And I was a minister in the Foreign Office at the time, and George's last engagement was to have breakfast with Tony Blair in Number 10... and then come through the gates opposite the entrance to Number 10 into the Foreign Office courtyard, which had been especially cleared of cars and people for the occasion, and then go up into the grand staircase to the Locarno room and give his farewell press conference. So I thought, well, it's not every day the President of the United States comes to my place of work, so I think I'll go and watch this. So I went and stood on the far side of the vast courtyard, and eventually, there was nobody there except for a sniper on the roof and an agitated security man who was clearly being told through his earpiece to get that civilian inside. And I'm afraid I pulled rank and said, no, I'm a minister, I'm staying, thank you very much. And in due course, George and Tony appeared on the far side of the square, and as they were turning to go up the grand staircase, George looked in my direction and went like that. And I thought, that's very odd, because I wasn't waving at him, you understand. And I looked at the windows, and there was nobody up there either. And that evening, I ran into Tony Blair in the House of Commons. He said, I saw you in the Foreign Office this morning, he said. I told George you were one of his greatest fans. In 1981, I wrote a novel called A Very British Coup. And some of you may remember it was made into a successful television series. I didn't have a lot to do with the television series, so I can say it was wonderful. I think it's Channel 4's most successful ever drama. It won 4 BAFTAs and an Emmy in the United States. Anyway, it was written in another age from this. Tony Benn was at the height of his powers. The establishment were in fear that there'd be a government headed by Tony Benn. There were generals in the home counties organizing private armies to prepare for this eventuality. And I was coming back from a Labour Party conference in the company of three people, one of whom was an MP, Stuart Holland, and two who later became MPs, Tony Banks and Peter Hayne. And one of our number said, I wonder how the establishment would react to the election of a Benn government. And somebody else said, oh, that would make an excellent subject for a novel. Whereupon Stuart Holland said that by the swimming pool in Greece the previous summer, he had tapped out 4 chapters of exactly such a novel. And Peter Hayne said he had just circulated a proposal for a novel along those lines to a number of publishers. So I thought, blimey, I'd better get on with this. And fortunately, I got there first. Years later, when I was giving a book talk in Ipswich, there was a man at the back who had once been a household name. Some of you might remember the name now, but most people don't. He'd been the chief political correspondent of the BBC, Peter Hardiman Scott. Oh, there you are. We are of that generation, aren't we? He said that when my novel was published, he'd been 2/3 of the way through a novel on exactly the same lines. And I realised how lucky I was, because his name was widely known at that time, and nobody had ever heard of me. Anyway, So, a very British coup is still in print to this day. And the reason it's endured is because a number of things that were in the novel, that in the novel were only speculation, subsequently came to pass. That's to say, there was an MI5 agent on the Council of the Campaign for Nuclear Disarmament. He was rumbled 3 years later. His name was Harry Newton. And then in 1986, 5 years after the publication of the novel, it turned out there was a man in room 101, a broadcasting house, who was stamping upturned Christmas trees on the personnel files of employees judged to be ideologically unsound. And his name was Brigadier Ronnie Stoneham. And then, of course, Peter Wright, a senior member of MI5, published his memoirs in which he talked of bugging and burgling his way across London, and that he and a small group of colleagues were firmly of the view that Harold Wilson was a Soviet agent. And not just Harold Wilson, Sir Roger Hollis, who was the head of MI5, Soviet agent. So all this gave the novel a certain traction, and as I say, kept it in print for the last 30-odd years. And then it was made into this very successful television series. Actually, just after I was elected to Parliament in 1987, I was invited to lunch with Marmaduke Hussey, the very grand gentleman who was the Director General of the BBC, sorry, the Chairman of the BBC. And the purpose of the lunch was for him to bend the ears of myself and a number of colleagues about the Broadcasting Act, which was then just a gleam in Mrs. Thatcher's eye. But halfway through the lunch, I said, "Who now works in room 101 now that Brigadier Stoneham has retired?" And all around the table, you could hear the sound of knives and forks hitting plates. And Marmaduke, choking on his smoked salmon, said, "I think this is one for you, Patricia." There was a lady called Patricia down the end of the table. She hummed and she hawed and she said, well, she thought it was a special assistant to the Director General. I said, "Yes, what's his name and what does he do?" And, you know, even though we had the entire top brass of the BBC round that table, not one of them could think of the name of this individual. I said, "I'll tell you what, we're only two floors up. Why don't I just nip down and knock on the door and ask?" "Oh, no, I wouldn't do that." They said, no, we'll write to you. And in due course, but after a bit of prompting, they did. And sure enough, it was, I think he was, what was his name? I forgot. Michael Hodder, Major Hodder, they were pains to assure me his job description was very different from Brigadier Stoneham's, but it looked remarkably similar to me. Anyway, so there we are. They were still at it, even though they'd been caught red-handed. I have now, after the lapse of a mere 37 years, published the sequel to A Very British Coup. It's called The Friends of Harry Perkins. In the first novel, my Prime Minister is a former Sheffield steelworker called Harry Perkins. And this one starts with Harry Perkins' funeral. I'll give you the opening line for free. Harry Perkins was buried on the day that America declared war on China. See, it's got something, hasn't it? Yeah. And it addresses, it's a human drama, of course, but it addresses three big and fairly topical issues. Brexit. Oh, yes, there's no escape from that. The rise of English nationalism, a feature of modern political life, I'm sorry to say, the growing tension between the United States and China, in fact, between all of us and China. So those are the three big themes that it addresses, but I would like to think it's readable. Hope someone will make the film. If anybody here with any influence, Barry, put in a word. Anyway, so I'll leave you with a little story entirely unrelated to everything I've just been talking about. I don't know whether, when you get to my time of life, you start forgetting names of people perhaps you met only yesterday. Did you say your name was Barry? Yes, you did. Yes, you did. Yeah, but anyway, there was a... You've all heard of the great musician Sir Thomas Beecham. Well, he had a very bad memory for faces, and of course, he was at his zenith in the days just after the war, when all the famous people weren't on television every night because most people didn't have television. And this, he was in Fortnum and Mason's, the posh grocers in Piccadilly. And this woman came in who he knew he ought to recognise. And she said, "Sir Thomas, how are you?" And he said he was fine. And he played for time, as you do in these circumstances. "How was she?" "Yes," she said, "I'm fine too." And your children?" "Oh, yes, they're fine." And your husband?" "Oh, yes," she said, "still king."
For more about the Oldie magazine and the lunches, go to theoldie.co.uk.